Metta means goodwill. It's closely related to mita, which is friend, friendliness. And you may have heard the word kalyanamita, which is a spiritually beautiful friend, somebody that you can trust. We develop metta towards ourselves, and we're strengthening that so that we can go back into the world and be true friends more and more, and manifest that quality not just to people we like. So metta is a brahmavihara. That means it's a sublime abiding. When thoughts are coming in strong and we're learning to sweep them aside, but when they're thoughts of anger or ill will or resentment, they're so sticky and they've got so much momentum in them, especially if we have issues of not forgiving. It's like a karmic weight in our hearts. And metta is the excellent salve for that. When we start to experience joy of the mind in the practice, that's when there is a softening around these emotions, and samadhi itself is emotional balance. It brings about that kind of greater, deeper balancing out of these tidal waves of strong emotional habits, so that we can just be rejuvenated from the joy of the mind, the purified mind. And as we develop a joyful abiding, who practices hatred intentionally? I don't know. I don't think I do, but sometimes one really has to work hard to overcome that. So when there is joy in the heart, that's contagious. And hatred is also contagious, which is why we need an antidote for it. And metta, the more we develop it and perfect it, we decondition the hatred. We actually can uproot it eventually, and that's what this practice helps us to do. It's to uproot the poisons of the mind. So those hateful feelings, that's the far enemy of metta. It's quite far from metta, so metta is like the antibiotic for hateful mind. But how hard is it to insert that? We have to cultivate it. Like, you can't just stick a tulip in the ground and say, grow. It has to be planted and watered and put in the right conditions, the right soil, the right sunlight. Give it metta and it'll grow. So if we make a suggestion to the mind, then it's planted. We've put in a seed, and when those hateful tidal waves come, it's like we have a toolbox and we quickly pull out this little metta shoot, and I'm just going to grow it. It's very difficult to grow it in negative conditions or in hostile conditions. And that's why this is such a wonderful, it's like a petri dish for metta right here. We can grow strong feelings of loving kindness, of goodwill. Whatever is in our mind is going to come out in our speech and in our actions. That's why what we're doing is such a valuable practice for the whole world. Even if you don't subscribe to precepts or rules per se, but if you believe in the power of loving kindness and forgiveness, that alone has an ethical weight to it. It will help us to perfect or to purify our thoughts, speech, and our actions. So if we want to deepen spiritually, then metta is like a polish for all the paramis, all the perfections. Dana, sila, virya, panya, the wisdom, nekama, which is renunciation, and then the kanti, patience, and the determination, that kind of resolve. This is medicine. It's spiritual healing, spiritual wholeness to bring forth. And then, of course, metta is one of them. Satya, truthfulness. That's so important. How hard it is to really admit, to say, oh, I haven't done something skillful. Because we want to look good and we want to feel good about ourselves. And we want our friends and people we respect to approve of how we are. That's a very big goad in the monastic life. When we live in community, we have all these mirrors of other people, and we can't hide anywhere. We are just so raw in front of everyone. And we see each other's cracks. But because we try to cultivate this attitude of metta for ourselves and each other, there's just so much compassion. This is how we are, but we don't want to stay this way. We want to progress and grow like that little crocus in the spring. We want to reach our full potential. And then the last of the paramis that metta polishes is equanimity, upekkha, which is the springboard, the field in which we can cultivate the practice of awakening, developing the knowledge that will give us the right factors to bring about the path and the fruit, the completion of the Eightfold Path, the fulfillment of the Third Noble Truth, the cessation of all our anger, our grief, our ill will, our disappointment, our sorrow, our suffering on every level. So metta has that ethical quality in itself. It helps us to purify our actions, our speech, and our thoughts. So that's its one ethical component, and it's called charita. And the other ethical component is varita, which means the principles of abstaining from things that are the enemies of metta, being nasty or mean, even mean thoughts. Because if you work all day with colleagues and somebody could walk through a door and just close it a little too hard, and you know that they're not happy. And maybe that was because you said something, or and that reverberates. So then we feel that kind of ill wind in the heart. We're just so reactive. We can't swallow that little pill of metta quick. But if we can remember metta, how important it is to have sense restraint. And that means also keeping guard of the mind by using mindfulness of the mind, and also moral shame or moral fear, which we look back on our actions, we review, just like at the end of a sitting, you review your practice and you see, well, how did I get this joy? And then you try to repeat that. And the four steps to success, the Iddhipada, at the end, you investigate. You don't want to be thinking a lot, but certainly reviewing what led to this good result, or what is bringing up this hateful mood in the mind that's preventing me from being with the breath. Then we can try to remove that, prevent it from arising again, and work on watering the seeds of metta, karuna, mudita, upekkha, and present moment awareness, not leaning into the past or jumping into the future, not strangling the object, balancing our energy, focusing on it again, and calming the breath, stilling the mind, so that the joy will bud again and brighten us. So those four steps very much mirror how you can apply this medicine of metta. Medicine and meditation, it's like we're self-doctoring. And we have the Buddha, the greatest doctor of all time, a universal doctor. And metta is called a universal principle of harmony and love. And in the Dhammapada, you may have read, hatred is never overcome by hatred, but by love alone. Forgiveness, metta, friendliness, compassion. This particular teaching is from the Anguttara Nikaya, which is the numerical discourses. It's called the Blessings of Metta. Monks, when universal love, leading to liberation of mind, is ardently practiced, developed, unrelentingly resorted to, used as one's vehicle, made the foundation of one's life, fully established, well consolidated and perfected, then these 11 blessings may be expected. What 11? One sleeps happily. One wakes up happily. One does not suffer bad dreams. One is dear to human beings. One is dear to non-human beings. The gods protect one, the higher beings, are attracted to us and they want to protect us. No fire or poison or weapon can harm one. One's mind gets quickly concentrated. The expression of one's face is serene. One dies unperturbed. And even if one fails to attain higher states, one will at least reach the state of the Brahma world. That's wonderful. There's another sutta, it's called the Simile of the Saw, sutta number 20 in the Majjhima Nikaya. Even if bandits were to sever you with a two-handed saw, limb by limb, and if a hateful thought were to arise in your mind, then you would not be following my teaching. That's the standard that the Buddha gives us. I remember the first time I read it, I just couldn't imagine how difficult that would be not to hate the person that was trying to saw off the limbs. Some years ago, I was living in New Zealand, and I was going to teach a retreat, and I was walking down to the train, and this car stopped, and these people got out and said, "Are you Buddhist nun?" And I said, "Yes. How did you know?" And so they had this pile of books in their car, and they said, "We have a book for you." And they handed me this book about a Tibetan Buddhist nun. And then they drove away. So it was called Sorrow Mountain. It's a true story. She died quite recently, and she was very old when this journalist interviewed her. She had spent 20 years incarcerated in China in a prison. And they arrested her because she was a nun, which at that time was still taboo. This particular nun, bless her heart, they used to hang her upside down by her legs. And she tells the specific tortures, remembering this from the Buddha's teaching on the Simile of the Saw. She would be chanting the refuge in Tibetan, Bhutang Saranam Gacchami. So she kept chanting those words. And the guards would get so angry at her and they would beat her to shut up. But she didn't, she just kept chanting. So they taped her lips shut. And she told the journalist, "They couldn't stop me," because inside she continued chanting even though she couldn't move her lips. It came out in the interview when she was asked, she said, "No, I bear no hatred towards those guards." No hatred. So the Buddha did give a standard, and there are beings who have been able to do that. This is an encouragement to us to strive in this direction. If we incline our minds, that's why the power of intention is either for wholesomeness or unwholesomeness. And if we set our mind on a particular goal, on a particular path, this is an ancient path, a wonderful path that the Buddha discovered. And the path is within us. It's not out there somewhere. Just like the suffering, we think the suffering is out there. The suffering is in us. We also think the happiness is out there. The happiness is in us. That's the key, is to know that whatever difficulty or depression or discouragement or disappointment that we experience, the medicine for that is within us. The Buddha also said, when Ananda asked him, "Lord, a spiritual friend is 50% of the path, isn't it?" And he said, "Say not so, Ananda. A spiritual friend is 100% of the path." But it doesn't mean that we always go and rely on spiritual friends when we're down or we need a shoulder to lean on. Because eventually, when we learn the practice and we develop the skills to meditate properly, to still the mind, to bring forth the joy from within, the stillness from within, the equanimity from within, the balance, then we can be a friend to ourselves in a most exalted way. And then the Buddha becomes our best friend. And his teaching to us is the path itself. We listen to the teaching and we see, okay, I can take one more breath. I can take one more step. So the first thing is to practice metta in an ardent way. And the Pali word is asevita. It means ardently. The teaching is alive. The Buddha is here with us. And that's like chanda. You really want to do this. Even if your mind is yelling at you, old ghosts haunting us, we just turn the volume up on the sound of the teaching, and it's going to drown out those old echoes and reverberations that we're used to hearing. In fact, maybe at some negative level, the residue of that is comforting to us. At least we're alive because we can feel something. But we can do much better than that. We can completely subdue those vibrations with the purity of this good will for ourselves. That much we can do. And as long as we have a foothold on goodwill, we're on our way up the mountain. It might be steep, but it's just one breath, one foot at a time. And that gives us the courage to take another. Whether we're young or old, educated or not educated, whatever country we're from, whatever height, dimensions, attributes, whatever we have, it's our equipment, it's karmic. And we just get on with it. Because the real suffering is in the heart. The physical, the body will do what it does. We could be at death's door and still awaken. It's never too late to cross that gap to the farther shore. So ardency, making it like the philosophy, the guiding principle of our life. I'm just going to keep working on goodwill, not ill will, because ill will is the enemy of metta, and it's a great hindrance on the path. And we've all had the anger, hatred, self-disparagement, criticizing somebody else, whoever it is. We've all been there, done that. What else can we do? And this we can do. It's exalted, an exalted choice or option. That chanda affects our attitude. It affects our conduct and our speech. We're going to start being much more careful because we're on new ground. Maybe it's a little intimidating, but maybe we're scared that we're going to have to be cut to pieces because it hurts to uproot all those years and years of, or lifetimes of conditioning. Then there's bhavita. Many of you have heard the word bhavana, to develop the path. And this bhavita is develop metta. Develop it. We have the ardency for it. So now we're on the virya, second step of success, is to develop it. And we learn how to do that. We develop the skill. As soon as we notice a vibration of ill will, ill wind blowing, we can smell it, we can taste it, we can really viscerally feel it. So just bring in that antidote, that medicine, to introduce a goodwill. You see that person again and you don't have a good feeling, but awareness and just know this person works really hard. Find one good quality to help change our attitude. Offer a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, anything, a paper clip. It's not expensive. But to abide in anger is very expensive. It's toxic. It's really pollution. It doesn't give us any spiritual oxygen at all. We can't even breathe. We're crowded out of our heart with anger. It's so poisonous. This developing of metta brings about the unification of mind. It's the precursor for samadhi. Actually, goodwill is an aspect of every wholesome mind state. Every wholesome mind state will have goodwill in it. So metta can easily be brought in, developed, and then that helps the samadhi to get momentum. So we really want to transform ourselves in this way so that we can get the benefits of our meditation practice. The next one is bahulikata. The word bahula, sambahula, it's the word for many times. So bahulikata, the perfecting, this is unrelentingly resorting to. This is the proper resort. It's like taking out the garbage. It's so cleansing and it's so reaffirming to be restored. So if we give our heart to the practice of metta, forgiveness, tolerance, acceptance, softening, it's just softening that ill will, that ill wind. But we have to do it fast, because if the ill wind gets a footing, then we could fall off the mountain. Now we're climbing, right? So bahulikata is unrelentingly, like continuously keeping the metta going, so that if something comes up, we don't react in our old ways. We've picked up the practice. We're very eager, ardent, zealous, devoted to it. Then we bring up energy towards it. We develop it. And then we try to be continuous. And you've heard these kind of instructions in terms of the practice of mindfulness and how much that can conduce to concentration and focus and stilling the mind, calming and stabilizing. So it happens incrementally. But once it takes off, many of you have already experienced that shift where things just fall into place. And how miraculous that is. This is a really lovely one. It's called Jnanikata. Jnani, Jnana. Mahayana or Hinayana. It's a vehicle. Make metta your vehicle. And we're developing all our spiritual powers when we're doing the bahulikata, many, many times resorting to that safe place where metta is the antidote to the poison, the toxic waste of years of conditioning. But we didn't know. We allowed ourselves to have smoke coming out of our ears. And there's a residue of that charcoal in the heart, in the mind. But now we're polishing it with metta and preparing the powers of faith, energy, concentration, mindfulness, and wisdom to know this antidote is a vehicle. And we put together the axle, the tires, the steering wheel, the upholstery, the engine, and we're giving it the fuel of metta. And it's starting to chug along, little by little. We're going down the path with this practice of goodwill, of a loving heart, a kindness. Kindness is so available to practice. This can affect our interpersonal relationships. Number one, it can affect our relationship to ourselves. And it can affect how we are with others. We have ant problem. We have to talk to the ants and take them out one by one. Carpenter ants, they're so intelligent. And if you don't take them for a long walk, they just come right back in. At the end of the winter, they were already back. So you're slipping on the ice and trying to carry this ant to a place where it won't freeze. Under the house, there's a porch and there's earth and they can crawl in. Anyway. So the Jnanikata, using the vehicle of metta and making metta the only mode of communication that we use. So we try to avoid hostile speech, sarcastic speech, gossip. That's anyway in the precepts. This is the ethical power of metta in our practice, because even if we're in silence, there's a whole lecture going on in the head, a constant commentary, an editorial. And it's pretty slick speech. It's so convincing. We keep falling into it and buying into it. And we have to take great care of what we listen to somehow remove that from our psyche and use this loving kindness, this loving accepting the medicine into our heart and applying it, like filling the mind with it so that nothing else has space to get in, to sneak in. Because those old voices have a way of blowing in like an ill wind. But we keep a seal on our mind so that this is the only way we communicate to ourselves through metta and to others. If we remember someone in our practice and we have some fear or some grudge against that person, but if we're using this as our only vehicle, it just falls away. It has nowhere to land. It's like a plane that suddenly you give it different coordinates and tell it to try over there, and it disappears. You give it the BPS, Buddha's positioning system, instead of the GPS. It's so familiar with sitting in our own heart, and even though we haven't got space for that hateful feeling anymore, we're just sick of it. But we still repeat it and repeat it. Now, we're constantly repeating this refrain of metta. Pick four phrases that appeal to you. In Pali, or use your mother language, because that will really deeply penetrate into the psyche. May I be well, may I be happy, may I be free from anger, free from suffering. May I be peaceful. Over and over and over, until you really can go back to that deeply present state of mind with a samadhi. It's building its power, its joy, its energy, and the mind is becoming brighter, and the metta is polishing it, and then we can see so clearly, because metta working together with the five faculties, the five powers of the mind, the bala, that the mind is filled up with knowing this loving quality, and having it fuel our ability to have a firm and stable focus on the breath, or on the heart, or just on the quality of love, of true universal feeling of unity. As the Buddha himself said, one's mind gets quickly concentrated, quickly unified, gone to unity, that ekagata. So you're sitting in this divine vehicle. The Buddha gave us an inheritance, like parents give an inheritance. He's like the universal, the most sublime parent, doctor, gave us this medicine, and we have a right to sit in this divine vehicle and travel in. It's an inward path. So then there's vatukata, making it a foundation for our life. It becomes a shelter for us. So then we can actually live within that shelter of metta. It's a protection. You can be homeless and still be safe with that kind of heart, mind. As the Buddha said, one of the blessings is that no fire or poison or weapon can harm us. I was working in Senegal when I was a laywoman, and I went to the Casamance, which is in the south. It was in broad daylight, and I was walking from the airport to the house of a friend who lived right near the beach. And this young guy followed me to a place where there were no people, and then he attacked me. And he starts ripping off my clothes. And so I started chanting. I wasn't a nun yet, but I was a little strange, I guess. I started chanting, and he said, "What is that you're saying?" And I tried to use his language. I said, I'm praying to God to help me because nobody else will. And he was so shocked. He just stood up and he threw my shirt, whatever he had, on the ground. He said, okay, I won't touch you. And I looked at him. I couldn't believe it. And he said, no, I won't. And he stood back and he said, okay, what have you got in your bag? I said, I have $200 and my passport. And he said, okay, give me money. And I said, I can't give you money, but I can give you forgiveness. What religion are you? He said, I'm Christian. I said, okay, why don't you go to church and ask for forgiveness? He said, can you give me 25 cents? I have to give it to the priest. So I gave him 25 cents and he went away. I'm telling you, the power of forgiveness is... I became a nun. It was about a year later. Not because of that. I was already inclined in this direction. So we can live in that safety. It's a safe place. No one will harm you. So the next one is anuttita. And that refers to being rooted to metta. It's just like we're tied to it. Not only do we live in it in a safe way, like when we're just alone, but wherever we go, we're tied to it. Wherever we wander, if we stay rooted in the heart to this metta practice, it takes root in us and it grows. And the effort changes to an energy. It's effortless. It's no longer having to instruct ourselves, to coach ourselves and goad ourselves into doing it. We see this is so powerful and we know that this is the thing to hold closest to our hearts and to keep feeding ourselves on metta. You know how we feed the body very well, but this is food for the heart. And just like the Dhamma, it's the best food for the heart. So most important is there are less times when we resort to the old ways. We're really skilled at it. We've done so much to eradicate or expel or extricate ourselves from a hateful mind state and apply the metta practice so many times that now the heart just goes there. Then there's the paricitta, and it refers to the skill. So we're rooted to it, we're anchored in metta, and then we have this expertise in it. And somebody could come and say something really unpleasant and we would be able to not react. So this will deeply affect our conduct, day-to-day practical practice. And some people take this metta practice that I will abide in a heart of loving kindness all the time for the rest of my life. And it's really wonderful to see. The last one is the susamarada. It's the perfection of metta. So if one has perfected this level of wholesomeness, the mind is really pure and one can abide in a deep, deep level of samadhi. Very equanimous. So metta is actually developing the path that covers right view, right intention, because we understand what it means to transform our conduct and speech, what it means to live a wholesome life and to practice wholesomeness towards others in the heart. So right view, just about the human predicament and how we want to go beyond suffering. So we use the metta. Then right intention is setting our course like you would with the GPS. It's a BPS course and it's powerful. And then we have the realization, the perfection of metta, that's actually having the citta completely with metta all the time. Nothing else can get in there. So that's really the Four Noble Truths right there in one word, one thought, one intention, one breath. If somebody were to show up in the meditation hall with a rifle and say, okay, this is it. We have no protector. But we have the Dhamma. I would try to bring up some metta because this person doesn't know the karmic consequences of what they're about to do. It's very not good karma to kill bhikkhunis. I have to tell you this one more story. This happened in an Amish community. A milkman came in and shot these 10 little girls, and 5 of them survived, and 2 of them were sisters. They were 5 years old. One of the sisters that survived told the story how one of the girls that died said to him, "Shoot me first." I've contemplated that as a way of meeting a terrifying moment. How to do that? Can we receive it, really? Not with fear, not wanting to run away, just receive it. Then we could die with metta. And that's an opening for full awakening. It's a fulfillment of the path. We do want to prepare for death, and we don't know how we're going to die or when. So to be in this kind of a vehicle, in this kind of shelter, in this kind of security, all the health insurance, whatever we do, is not going to work the way this shielding the heart from the inner poisons can fulfill the path to awakening. That's the greatest blessing that we could realize. So I think that's what the Buddha meant when he said, when universal love leading to liberation of mind is ardently practiced, developed, unrelentingly resorted to, and perfected, we can realize the deathless from there. So I offer that for you as a contemplation for the retreat.